Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for August's Exotics Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, lecturer at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies based at the University of Edinburgh, Emma Keeble. Thank you, Emma. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here today speaking, and thank you so much for joining this webinar. I hope very much you will find it useful and give you some real tips in terms of your rabbit cases that you're seeing in practice. A lot of this is really just things that I find useful that hopefully I can impart to you, and maybe you're already doing this, but it's helpful to think about how we handle our rabbit cases. They are very different to dogs and cats in terms of their response to handling and stressful situations. So I thought I would just do a little bit of an introduction about rabbits and the sort of uniqueness in terms of their clinical exam. I do think our owners are expecting a really high standard of care these days for their pets, and this really is on a similar level to the care that we are giving for our dog and cat patients. But rabbits are very different. They are a prey species. They do react in different ways to the stress of handling and clinical exam. And we need to bear this in mind for our rabbit cases and try and make that process as smooth as possible. Also, making sure that our staff are well trained in terms of handling. We do still occasionally get advice requests from vets in practice asking about animals and how to treat them when their spines have been fractured through often a rabbit jumping off a table or twisting unexpectedly whilst being handled. This may be something that happens at home or very rarely in the veterinary consult room. We do need to be aware of this. So, receiving appropriate training, making sure that you are happy with how your staff handle these animals is really, really important. We also do need to get a very accurate clinical history because, being a prey species, they hide signs of illness and signs can be incredibly subtle compared to those of dogs and cats. So, we want to be making sure that discussion with the owner is very complete, otherwise we may be missing really key points. And then we also need to bear in mind how different rabbits are in terms of their anatomy, behavior, and physiological responses to a stressful situation. And that needs to be borne in mind because, for instance, when you're trying to assess visual response in rabbits, the menace reflex is very poor because it's a prey species. They literally don't sort of blink and react. So, this is again something that ought to be borne in mind when we're looking at these animals. So, when I was thinking about this lecture and just trying to figure out how a consult process evolves, I was thinking actually there are sort of five key areas that we can, as a veterinary surgeon, influence to ensure a really positive outcome for our pet rabbits and for their owners. And I think the number one point I want to make is that trying to make it as stress-free as possible, of course, it's going to be stressful for everybody, but trying to make that process as stress-free, and there are quite a few sort of things that you can do to help with that process and reduce the stress levels, both in the rabbit and in our owners as well. We do get some owners who get very upset when they see their rabbit looking distressed coming to the vets, and that obviously will project onto the animal as well. So we want to ensure that that is a really sort of smooth process, and there are a few things we'll talk through to enable that to happen. We also want to think about how thorough our clinical history is because, as I said, animals might be hiding things, and owners often are really closely tuned into their animal, and we need to be listening to them. If they're worried, I'm worried usually. That's my sort of mantra. I think another thing that we probably don't do that much, again, it may be time constraints in clinical practice, but get the animal out and look at it at a distance before any handling. So it might be you just open the top of the carrier, but it might be you open the door and you let that animal come out in its own time. And there's so much we can glean from that moment before we actually get hands on and the animal freezes. Once we do get hands on, we need to be really thorough with our clinical exam. And there are two key things I'd need you to be doing ideally with every single rabbit case. And those are a thorough dental exam with an otoscope and a thorough ear exam with an otoscope. Now, this is something we teach our students that they should be doing in every rabbit case. Hopefully, this is something that vets in practice are also doing. You will start to pick up on clinical disease and issues by doing those two things as part of your normal clinical exam. And then I think number five, thinking about it, all of this can be done, but we also need to have really good communication channels with our clients to move forwards and understand what the next step is for their animal. And this is really, really a key part of being a good vet, I think. So we talked about stress. Everyone's stressed, but rabbits seem to get stress even more. And this can be a big issue. So we want to think about what it is that stresses that animal coming to the vet practice. If they're not accustomed to handling or transport, this can be a real issue. And we can think about ways to reduce this. And habituation is one of those things. So getting the rabbit used to the box that it's carried in, so perhaps having that around the area where it's housed so it can pop in and out, perhaps taking it out in the car from an early age. These are things that can be done. So we can actually give advice to an owner at the point that they obtain the animal, but also prior to them coming in to the vet surgery. Think about what they're actually carried in as well. I do have a client who brings their rabbit in sat as this picture is posed on the front of their passenger seat, which obviously we've had conversations about that this is not safe and is not an appropriate means of carrying your animal. So we do want to have appropriate constraint with non-slip flooring, perhaps with familiar scented items in there. Perhaps with a companion animal. Now, this can be sometimes in the interest of the animal, sometimes not, depending on whether that animal is also stressed and likely then to go into something like gut stasis. Offering treats and providing food items within that carry box is also a good idea. But I think habituating the animal to the box and having it as a normal item in their environment is really, really important. And also habituating them to the noise of the car, to traveling, this is hopefully going to make it more of a positive experience than a really stressed, novel experience that they react to. Companion animals, it can go either way, but I think again that's a discussion to have with the client. Most animals do seem to be more relaxed if they have a companion with them, and if that companion is also not stressed by the event, then I think it probably is better to encourage companions to come in as well. We often have a variety of things that animals are brought in. One owner we have has decorated a lovely pram like this with Diamante studs and the rabbit's name. So this rabbit is wheeled in the baby pram with its friend, and this is something that she feels the rabbit has become habituated to and is less stressed by. We do have obviously inappropriate carriers that might be brought in, ones that rabbit could escape from, that are perhaps not able to slip on, and we need to be advising our owners of that. Once you actually arrive at the vet clinic, there are things that we can talk to our reception staff about implementing to reduce the stress. If we've got an animal that's extremely stressy, it might be better for that animal to wait outside with its owner in the car, especially if they're barking dogs, a lot of noise in reception. I think the ideal would be to have a separate waiting area, but that obviously doesn't always occur. But maybe if you're really into your rabbit cases, thinking about trying to provide that separate quiet area, I think is really, really important. And we also need our staff to know what are emergencies and what are not. So we don't want to be telling an owner to wait patiently in the car with our animal if we've got a severely dyspneic rabbit that needs to go straight onto oxygen, or any obvious sort of traumatic injuries, for example. Or a rabbit that's really collapsed and not lifting its head and hypothermic. At the vet school, it's not ideal. We have a sort of separate small area at the side where we actually have dogs to the right of this picture, but Cats and rabbits share the same waiting area, which is absolutely not ideal because we've got a predator-prey species together. So I think the real ideal would be to have a totally separate waiting area for these animals, or for very stressy animals to wait in the car. It's quite a large area that we have. It's also quite echoey. It's not ideal for a prey species. Once we have that animal in with us in the consult, we do need to get a history. And I quite often, as I'm walking up to the consult room, have a chat with the owner to try and glean more information about the problem. If we've already taken a really, really thorough history, then we often don't recap on that unless anything significant has changed. But I do think if it's the first time you're seeing that animal, you should be getting all the details that you need, particularly of husbandry and diet, because in as other exotic pets, in rabbits as well, husbandry and diet related issues are still quite rife, and we can do a lot to educate owners, and that then in the long term makes your life a lot easier, and simpler, and the consultation process faster if you've got that information and you've educated your client and discussed how best to manage the diet and the husbandry. It's interesting, we did a study fairly recently on longevity factors and diet in rabbits with a student at the vet school. And it was really interesting that most of our owners do feed appropriate hay and fibre and good quality diets to their pets. And this is different to other studies that have been looked at where muesli diets are still quite commonly fed. So I think getting a good client base that's well educated and is on board with you right from the start is key. So don't miss this opportunity when you first see this animal to get all that information. The other reason for it, as we say here, is owners sometimes do still miss subtle clinical signs, and I do see these cases where even with very highly tuned owners to their animals, they can miss things. So we do need to get a good history. We need to do a good, thorough clinical exam. And we also do need to listen to the owner. I said at the start, if they're worried, then usually I'm worried. There's something going on. Don't dismiss things and do the thorough workup and work out whether we feel this is the right way forward. So I just changed the picture in the top right corner. It was a little Netherland dwarf rabbit. Just wondering, looking at that animal, can we tell whether there's a problem? Are we concerned about the way the animal's lying? I think obviously from a distance we can't, but it is a little bit unusual. The next photo shows this animal sitting upright. It's absolutely fine. This is a normal behaviour for this animal. It lies flat out with its legs stretched back, and an owner would know this, and be happy to reassure us that the animal is actually fine. So when we're getting our clinical history, it can be a little bit time consuming. Perhaps if you are able to allow an extra 5 minutes beforehand, then that would be really helpful. I know that's not always possible in clinical practice, but there will be benefits long term that will ensure that actually consultation process is quicker and we can get more accurate diagnosis. Another way forward would be if you are struggling time wise and perhaps not allowed to spend more time with the case, getting an owner to fill out the history form while they're waiting in the consult room. You could have some key sort of husbandry and diet related questions on that, or you could even get your reception staff to email and ask for a history beforehand with specific pointers. If we don't have our full history, or need to get it because we've seen the animal before, then we do need to ask whether anything's changed recently at all. And hopefully you are getting these rabbits in for health checks routinely, vaccinations, and that's an ideal time to recap and discuss husbandry and diet. As we know, inappropriate diet or housing or general management, it really can predispose these animals to different health issues. It can affect their longevity and overall health, and they are preventable and will ensure better welfare for your pet rabbit patients. And you can see the picture in this corner here. This rabbit is clinically obese, and that will lead to major issues with respiratory disease, heart disease, joint disease and osteoarthritis as it gets older, so and liver disease as well potentially. We need to be talking to our owners and getting this animal onto an appropriate diet plan. So what we're needing to do is get a full clinical history. I often, while I'm chatting, I'm looking at what the rabbit's doing. We are very lucky and we usually have students in with us, so I get them to take a resting respiratory rate while the animal's still in the carrier. But obviously we do also need to check, is the animal in extremis? Is it collapsed? Does immediate first aid need to be given? And then really our clinical history taking is fairly standard approach. We do need to ask about the housing, the diet, any vaccination status and whether it's neutered or not. We have a video here. This is looking at an animal from a distance. We're just about to play it. And what I want you to do is look at the respiratory pattern and rate while we're showing this short video clip. I'll just play it now. It's only a few seconds. But I hope you can appreciate that animal is really struggling for its breath. We've got very obvious upper respiratory movement. We've got very obvious abdominal movement as well. And actually, we don't have sound for this video, but you would also hear stertorous breathing as the animal is labouring its inspiratory noise as they are nasal breathers. So if you saw this animal in your consult room, it would immediately require oxygen, and I would be taking it into an incubator with oxygenation and then go back to the owner to chat. So I'll just quickly play that again just to show you. This animal had a partial laryngeal obstruction due to a tongue-based ulcer that was secondary to dental disease. So really, really stertorous breathing. I've got a table here just to show you the key points, hopefully just to make it sort of relevant more to the rabbit patient. But we do need to get information on all these components from our clients. Again, it can be easily done with a form or an email beforehand, but all these points are very salient to the clinical history. Obviously, we need to know about contact animals, both rabbit species and other species, in case of any disease possibility, and what previous problems this animal may or may not have had. We want to know about its housing, whether it's indoors, outdoors, litter training, frequency of cleaning, access to wildlife, for example, and obviously diet, really important in terms of perhaps obesity or dental disease or GI health and status. With our gut stasis patients, there could be a history of recent molt or of ingestion of abnormal things such as, newspaper, cardboard, carpets quite commonly are chewed as well. So we want to know about all of those factors. Obviously, vaccination status, hopefully, as vets, we have a record of that, but we should be advising that rabbits are routinely vaccinated for both myxomatosis and RHV1 and 2 strains. And that is really, really important. What other ill health has perhaps been recorded, or ill health in companion animals? And then, obviously, we get to the current concern, and we want to sort of categorize this further in terms of the chronicity of it, what was initially seen, how that has developed, how commonly it's occurring, if there's any treatments or palliative care that owner has tried at home or tests performed. So all of that will help us document this animal's health status and well-being, hopefully, and also perhaps the commitment of the owner as well to their care. So this is just again another video to show you at a distance. I've just taken the door off this carrier. We're just going to look and see what this animal does. Our consulting room floors are not ideal. They are quite slippy, so rabbits can be reluctant to come out, and quite often I will actually put a large towel in front of the carrier just to encourage them out. But because they're slippy, then they're more likely to show any issues with gait up. So I'll just play this video and let you have a look and see what your thoughts are on how this animal's moving. I've obviously got a little friend coming out as well, but we're looking at the grey lop at the front. So we're quite hesitant. We're not that happy to hop. We're pivoting quite a lot. We've now decided to go and follow our friend, and we've done some good hops there. But there was a degree of reluctance at the start, and when we're watching, there's a bit of crawling, and the hind limbs aren't moving perhaps as well as they should be. Very subtle, but I think we'd want to sort of ask some further questions about that animal and just see, particularly, obviously, we don't know its age, but if it's older, 6, 7, 8, possibly older than that, then we want to be thinking about whether this animal could be starting with osteoarthritis. So that's part of our observation from a distance. We can get the respiratory rate, we can have a look at the rabbit in situ and characterize its breathing, whether it's very abdominal with its component or stertorous, what's passed in terms of urine and droppings, and we can just watch its general demeanor, because if it's well habituated to people, often it want to come out, it'll be alert, it'll be looking around, and if it's not, then we might be concerned. I've got another video to show you again, just looking at breathing of this animal. Just even from that still picture, I'm worried about this animal. Its eyes are quite oval. There's possibly some ocular and nasal discharge. Its coat is very unkempt and quite starey. It doesn't look particularly happy. So we'll have a look at its breathing. I'll just play again a fairly short video. Nasal twitches do not always match up to actual respiratory rate and pattern, so we also need to be looking at the flank area to see how much abdominal effort there is. And certainly in this animal, we do have slight increased abdominal effort. And we need to be knowing what's normal for respiratory rate and pattern. And I do get concerned. I mean, usually between 40 and 60 is normal in consult room conditions. If we're going up to 80 respiratory rate per minute, then that's cause for concern. Here is another video I wanted to show you. Again, just thinking about gait and what's normal. I think probably many vets don't put animals down on the floor to watch how they're walking, and I do feel this should be a very key part of your clinical examination. This animal, as you're seeing it's walking, it's barely able to hop. So we've got really shuffling hind limb gait. We're not getting clear, discrete hops. It feels like it's reluctant to move. And when it does, it's not able to place its hind limbs well. There's a little bit of grooming going on as well. I'll play that first bit again so you can see the initial movement, so you're happy how abnormal this is. So that's sort of crawling. Rabbits that start crawling, sometimes they'll do it if there's a slippery floor and they're a little bit unsure, but then they should start hopping. So things like that crawling stance or pivoting on the back end rather than taking hops to turn are cause for concern that there's pain, possibly spinal disease or osteoarthritis ongoing. Another video, I quite like these rabbits that hop around the consult room, just again to really show you how this animal's negotiating. Look at the crawling there. It's really unhappy. And that is something, again, I usually ask owners, does this happen at home as well? Have you noticed it in familiar surroundings? Perhaps get them to film or video the animal at home so you can assess its gait there. But this rabbit is really reluctant to move. It's pivoting there. And then when it does move forwards, it does so as a sort of crawl. The hops are not nice and clean, and there we go, it's fallen into the box now because it wanted to go back in. But you can see there's a real reluctance to move there. And the position, the back end sort of is quite hunched as well. That's our observation from a distance. Lots can be gleaned. We can look at the gait, we can look at demeanor, fecal production, we can assess body and condition and coat quality. And the other thing we can do from a distance, I always look at the rabbit face on, so we can look for any ocular disease or discharge or any nasal discharge. And then we can also look at facial symmetry. And this is really, really important. I'll show you a picture in a minute of asymmetry, but middle ear disease is actually really quite common in pet rabbits, particularly Lopid rabbits, and facial contracture on the affected side is something you will see as a common occurrence in practice when you start seeing these rabbits. So look out for that. It's very abnormal, and once you've seen it, you won't miss it, but it is easily missed by owners and vets. I'm just here showing a picture of an eye because this animal was profoundly anemic. We might not be able to tell this from a distance, but we might look at that eye and think, is that a bit pale? And then look at other areas to determine, particularly when we're looking with the otoscope in the mouth, we can have a look at mucous membrane colour there as well. Have we got third eyelids protruding? Could we have a retrobulbar mass? Or could this be due to a mass in the thorax, such as a thymoma? We've also got Epiphora and discharge. So we need to note these things. This is a rabbit looking straight on that has got facial muscle contracture on the affected side. So I've got a wee arrow I can just show you. This is the affected side. You can see the lips are pulled up almost into a snarl. And this is the normal side, which you could actually mistake and look and say, well, actually, is the right side as we're looking at it, the animal's left side, is that actually paralyzed and more pronounced because of facial paralysis? But in these cases, the affected side is the side where we're seeing the muscle contracture and the sort of snarl, if you like, the face sort of pulled upwards. So this animal will almost certainly have middle ear disease, and that can be confirmed on CT examination. So if you see this, you need to be discussing it with your owner, saying it's abnormal. It's possible by this stage there's severe destruction of the tympanic bulla and bony changes, which could potentially be picked up on radiography if you haven't got CT. But really, CT imaging is the way forwards for this animal to determine the extent of the disease. And leaving it, I feel personally, is not really an option because these are likely to be very painful, and they are advanced stages of bulla disease. So we do need to be talking about options with owners. And rabbits hide, as we know, clinical signs. So this animal may not be losing weight, it may be eating. Often when you do otoscopic examination, you'll have increased length of the crowns of the cheek teeth on that side because it's been favouring the other side and chewing more on the left. We also want to be thinking about body condition, and a lot of our pet rabbits are perhaps overweight, but if there has recently been a recorded weight loss as well as body condition loss, then that could be cause for concern, unless the owner obviously has put the animal on a diet. So we do have clear guidelines for this. I've just downloaded the PMFA pet sizometer for rabbits, and it gives you a little bit of an indication as to the body condition scoring out of 5 for pet rabbits. We always teach our students that if the ribs feel like a breast pocket that's full of pencils and you're running your hand over those pencils, that's our ideal body condition. If they feel like sort of end-on ruler edges and very sharp, then this animal is quite emaciated and we need to be concerned about that. We also have a feel over the spine and over the pelvic area as well to palpate that and see body condition-wise what's going on. And if we've got a very thin animal, we need to be thinking, why is this occurring? And perhaps be offering some further diagnostics if we're worried to determine any underlying cause of disease. So finally, we've got to our clinical exam. There's a lot to think about, isn't there, before we get hands-on. But once we do finally get hands-on, we need to be aware of how unique rabbits are. They can be very unpredictable and they can do sudden movements. What we don't want is for any injuries to happen to our animals or actually to the handler or to ourselves if possible. I never forget a very small Netherland dwarf rabbit that decided out of the blue to jump over the owner's shoulder, and it used the owner's shoulder as a springboard, leapt high enough to hit the consult room ceiling, where it bounced back from the ceiling and amazingly was caught by its owner, the perfect sort of rugby catch, and was unharmed. But it gave myself and the owner such a shock. We made notes that this was an animal to be careful with. And I think sometimes the smaller rabbits can be very sudden in their movements, particularly Netherland dwarfs. I also find the giant breeds can really resent handling and be difficult as well. So get to know your animal, talk to your owner perhaps beforehand. How often is the animal handled, and is it happy being handled? If there's any concerns, you might want to consider, wrapping the animal in a towel and ensuring that it's safe and secure. Things that we can do to, we talked about stress earlier on in this, and we want to be minimizing our stress. So what sort of things could we do? Popping a towel down on the consult table that smells familiar is perhaps a good idea. We can use pet remedy, for example, to reduce stress sprayed onto the towel. We want it to be quiet. We don't want sudden noises, so perhaps locking the doors to the consult room. Making sure we always support the back when we're lifting and there's no opportunity for the animal to twist and turn. And obviously, don't leave that animal unattended on the table. We need to be placing it back carefully after handling into the box, and I always do this back end first so the rabbit doesn't jump forwards out of your arms and potentially fracture its spine. The bunny burrito is a way forward if the animal is perhaps fractious and unused to handling and can be a good idea. And we should never ever use the tonic immobility response. It's really stressful. Animals can become habituated to it, and some owners, encourage it and like it, but we need to be having that conversation that it's a stress response and shouldn't be used. So this is our little bunny burrito. We do have someone behind the rabbit out of shot holding onto the back end, so it's not just left on the table here. And this is a little bit about trancing. If you go online, there are even pictures and how-tos to do it, and obviously owners can get access freely to this information online. We need to be talking to them and telling them, please don't do this. It's stressful, and the rabbit is actually terrified. I do have an owner who used to insist on doing this and singing nursery songs to the rabbit at the same time, which terrified me probably as well as the rabbit. So we had a chat about how it was inappropriate, and the rabbit was probably happier just being held normally. So there's no right or wrong way for clinical exam, but my preferred way is head to tail, and it's kind of what we teach the students as well. And it is really important because rabbits will hide signs of ill health. We do need to know our normal clinical parameters, and these should hopefully be drummed into you. Rabbit heart rates can go up very, very rapidly, so trying to do the clinical parameters first thing before we finish our, we do our full in clinical exam. I try to get respiratory rate at rest, and we talked about between 40 and 60 perhaps being fairly normal, but above 80 being worrying. We do unfortunately need to get a rectal temperature. I perhaps don't do this in every animal, but if we've got any indication that this animal has been inappetent or lethargic, or we've got a focal area of abdominal pain or possible abscess, I will always take a temperature. And knowing normal values for rectal temperatures is really key. Anything below 37, we are worried. This animal is hypothermic. It needs immediate attention. And for every 1 degrees below that, we double the risk of this animal dying. So it's really, really important. If you get a low temperature, you need to be having a very serious discussion with the owner about what that means. And we do see rabbits with high temperatures with infections. So a classic example of this is we're seeing a lot of very young rabbits with repeated episodes of gut stasis and high temperatures. And these cases are grumbling appendicitis or sacculitis cases. So do bear in mind that an elevation in temperature, it could be a hot day, it could be stress, but we perhaps need to be thinking, along with obviously all our other clinical findings, does this animal need to come in and we take its temperature sequentially through the day just to double check that? Or is this actually spiking a fever? And we mentioned weight and body condition score, which should be done at every clinical exam. So once we've done those five parameters, we want to actually listen to the heart on both sides. Here we're assessing whether we do have a normal rate and rhythm, whether we can hear a murmur, And perhaps more key, especially in older animals or animals with prolapsed third eyelids, is the position of the heart changed? Is it more muffled on the left side? And can we hear it perhaps more on the right side? This could be an indication that we've got a thymoma in the chest, which can be fairly large before we see any clinical signs of dyspnea. And while you're auscultating the heart, check the pulses, the central auricular pulse and the femoral pulse for any pulse deficits. We need to auscultate the lung fields dorsally and ventrally, left and right, and also auscultate for normal gut sounds. Again, dorsal and ventrally, left and right, ideally for a minute per area, but obviously, practically, we're not going to have time to do that in a consult, but at least listening to hear. And what I'm more worried about is absence of gut sounds in a clinical case that's presenting as perhaps inappetent or reduced appetite and reduced droppings. This is significant. Often, though, bear in mind when rabbits have been transported and sat in perhaps a noisy consult room with dogs barking, they are highly stressed and you may not hear gut sounds. If the clinical history is that the owner's not worried about the appetite or the droppings, then this may be due to stress of transport, and we need to bear that in mind. And then we're looking basically head to tail, really, with our clinical exam. We want to thoroughly look at the nose, the eyes, the ears, and the mouth, and facial symmetry and palpation. So I start by looking at the head straight on, as I mentioned, looking for any asymmetry that could indicate middle ear disease, any discharge, mucous membrane colour, and then get hands on and actually palpate those areas. We want to be palpating the ear bases so that we know there are no swellings, particularly in lop-eared animals. We then move on to the lymph nodes around the neck, the prescapula, the inguinal, and the popliteal. And normally, we almost shouldn't be able to feel these. So, if you can feel these may be a problem. I'll also feel chest compliance. We mentioned thymoma is really common as that rabbits get older. You may feel a slightly reduced chest compliance. So we're just gently squeezing that ventral chest area just to see very gently if there's a reduced sort of ability to squeeze, basically. And we want to thoroughly palpate the abdomen. We need to know what's normal and what isn't. This animal that you can see has got quite dirty, what we call hankies. So the medial aspect of the paws are dirty, and that is clinically significant. It's probably had a nasal discharge and been wiping its forepaws and trying to clear that discharge. The other thing I should have mentioned that I didn't earlier with the auscultation, I also routinely listen over the trachea with my small stethoscope bell and over the nasal sinuses for any upper airway noise and to evaluate that further. This is us looking down ears, so we'll have palpated the ear bases. We've got a little video otoscope we can use to look down, but you can just as easily use a normal otoscope, and this should be routine practice for every rabbit in your clinical exam. And what you will find with your lop-eared rabbits is that they have very stenosed ear canals that are very difficult to see down to the tympanic membrane. Sometimes it's nigh on impossible. With your upright-eared rabbits, you should be able to get a good clear view down to the tympanic membrane. And this is something you should note then in your clinical notes that the ear canals are narrowed. Perhaps you've got inflammation, perhaps you've got a little bit of excess discharge as well. Feeling the bases of rabbits' ears is very important, and what you're doing is feeling at the very point where in lop-eared rabbits the ear bends, and that's where you will get ear base swellings appearing. So if you bend the ear over and put your finger just on the medial aspect, inner aspect of the ear, that's where you're feeling to get the ear base swellings. And they can be very small. So I often will feel both sides at the same time to appreciate any differences between them. Owners often miss these, and usually, if you palpate them gently, the rabbit will flinch. So, these are uncomfortable, and obviously something that needs to be addressed. This is another slide just showing you a mild facial asymmetry. Hopefully, you can see that. Again, I'll just use the arrow to show you. This is the affected side. So, this is actually higher than the normal side. This is normal. This is pulled up by facial contracture. So we're expecting this animal to have middle ear disease on the right side of the animal, on the left side of the picture as we're looking at it. We might also palpate skin masses, so having a really good feel along the coat, all over the body. This includes the mammary glands as well, because you do find mammary masses, and obviously recording any abnormalities that we find. And another thing that's commonly seen as we're looking through the fur is dry scaling, and this again needs further evaluation and workup because it could be related to ectoparasites, in particular Calotiella. We're looking also at mucous membrane colour. This we can assess looking at the eyes, when we look inside the mouth, and also when we're looking at the perineal area, just to see if that's looking very pale. When we palpate the abdomen, I mentioned knowing what's normal. I always personally locate the stomach first, which is on the left-hand side, just behind the rib cage, and palpate that. First thing I do, and once you've found the stomach, if you can just press it gently, there's soft ingesta, it's not distended beyond the rib cage. Hopefully, it's just a normal full stomach. I will then feel ventrally with both my hands for the cecum, which again should be soft, and food filled, ingesta filled, not gassy or poppy or painful. I'll move more midline and above the cecum to have a feel for the small intestines and also the loops of large bowel as well. The right kidney is usually located up quite far forwards underneath the rib cage, and the left kidney is very central and mobile within the abdomen. We should also be able to palpate the bladder in the pelvic area and any pain associated with that. And that's quite important to evaluate as well, because often rabbits, if they have pain around the bladder or cystitis, will freely urinate when you touch the bladder, and you can get a sample and have a look at that. Looking at the ventral area, we want to assess how clean this is. And obviously, the picture there is really dirty. And is this actual fecal staining, or is it urine staining? Is it actually then leading to urine scald and excoriation of the skin as well? Do we have any fly strike occurring? We want to sex the animal. It's amazing how often this can be inaccurate and wrong. And we want to double check that. Has it been neutered or not? Do make sure you lift the fur over the point of the hock and look for signs of hock sores. These are easily missed unless you lift that fur up and have a look under it. We want to check both of those hocks, and it's surprisingly common the amount of hock sores we see in pet rabbits. We want to palpate all the limbs and check all the nails as well. We'll look in the scent glands underneath on the ventrum just to check for any impactions. And then at the very end of our clinical exam, I will be doing a dental check to look inside the mouth, and I'll talk you through this just in a minute. So the previous slide was perhaps more fecal staining. This is showing urine staining at the back end. Often owners think this is just normal, but you shouldn't really be seeing this. So if you see a bit of yellow staining, okay, the skin might look normal, but I think this does warrant further discussion with the owner. Is this animal urinating properly, or is it perhaps finding it difficult to lift itself away from the urine flow as it's urinating? Or does it have a bladder infection or inflammation going on? Very common to see urine staining with older animals with osteoarthritis or spinal disease, perhaps vertebral spondylosis or disc disease. So don't just dismiss this. I think this would warrant a chat, and at the very least, a urine sample being brought in for dipstick-specific gravity. And if there are any concerns on that, perhaps sediment analysis of perhaps a more sterile free catch sample or cystocentesis sample. This is real urine scalding and staining, and the animal's actually sodden at the back end. This animal actually had a bladder stone and underlying bacterial cystitis. So just looking at the sort of weight and body condition of the animal from the top is also key to assessing that. We showed you the PET seismometer earlier as well. This is us just taking temperature and looking at the perineal area. And then the dental exam, as I mentioned, I was going to talk through this perhaps in more detail. I do it at the very end of the exam. Usually, I have the rabbit in sternal, obviously not on its back. And I do explain to owners that we could easily miss things with this exam. Up to 50% of lesions in chinchillas are missed. Hopefully, as we get better with rabbits, perhaps less in rabbits. But The view is limited, and some rabbits are better at this than others. There are two ways you can do it. One is to cover the eyes with your I'm right-handed, so I hold the otoscope in my right hand and use my left hand and cover the eyes with the top of my hand, and lift the lips up with my index finger and thumb. You can also put a thumb under the jaw and hold the whole head so the animal can't move or jump. And in a more fractious rabbit, perhaps I would do this to control the head more readily. And we're just using an otoscope's cone. I tend to use a reasonably wide one because they do tolerate it okay. If you use quite a small cone, your field of view is very limited and it can be easy to miss things. There is a way where you can go in across the tongue, but I find rabbits really resent this. So I tend to just go in on one side, come out, go in again on the other side, and just run it exactly straight into the rabbit's mouth. One thing I find students do, which perhaps inexperienced people might be more tempted to do, is they ram it in very fast and abrade the upper gum on the first cheek tooth, and actually cause quite severe sores there. So just don't be tempted to push it too far in initially. Just advance it slowly and get, as you're advancing it, look through it to see where you are and check your field of view. We also want to be looking at this incisors, obviously, checking that they're growing in a normal way, checking that they're not ribbed at all or discoloured, and those can give us indication for possible underlying disease. So this is what I just talked through with you, just outlining it perhaps more clearly than perhaps I have just done, but through talking. But we're wanting to look really at the first premolar on the upper and lower arcades. And what we can do then is look at the quality of that molar. Is it ribbed? Is it discoloured? Look at the pattern of growth and wear. And we should be doing this at every consultation. And I always make notes of what I'm seeing, whether there is an uneven wear pattern, whether the uppers, which is normal and more worn than the lowers. The lowers tend to be longer than the uppers, but if this is excessive or if one side is different to the other, then that's really helpful to know. This is just actually a sedated animal using mouth gags to look at those dental arcades. We could be missing things at the back of the mouth, but we can get a good look at the tongue. We can also assess if there's any halitosis while we're doing this. So this is the cone I use and the simple otoscope, and this is me using my index finger and thumb just to lift the lips up and have a look. And the more you do of these, the better you'll get, and the more the rabbit will tolerate it. What we want to look out for, I mentioned the irregular height or growth or any spikes we might actually see or ulceration. You might see pus, free pus within the mouth or blood or excessive saliva. I note that as well. If you're seeing a lot of saliva on one side, that could be significant. One thing to note though, at the very base of the tongue, as you're going in at the back, you will see a very obvious pink vascular plexus, which is normal. And sometimes, as you're glimpsing it briefly, it could look like it's bleeding or it's reddened. Just be aware that that can be totally normal. So, our final point, I mentioned at the start there were five clear points that really key to a successful consultation. I think the final point is then communicating all your findings and your feelings on the history, the clinical history to that owner, and trying to be clear and concise about what you found and what the treatment options are moving forwards. And I do think we need to spend time in this area as vets to develop that relationship with our clients and to actually realize that if we lay down that groundwork of discussion in terms of the husbandry, the diet, this will then make our lives a lot easier in the future when we see that animal back. So don't underestimate how important good client communication is. And clients really love it. I mean, we have a lot of advice sheets that we hand out. There are a lot of good advice sheets available, information available online, for example, from the Rabbit Welfare Association Fund. We need to be talking about what the vaccination protocols are, what our neutering advice is, what appropriate husbandry and diet. And perhaps if we have dental issues, we need to be getting those animals back in regularly for dental checks. You know, perhaps every 3 months initially, perhaps we can then increase it to every 6 months. Often we're asked about worming and flea treatment, and we need to have that discussion. And obviously mentioning that there is insurance available now for rabbits is really key too. So I just wanted to recap on those 5 points that I feel are really important for a really successful rabbit consultation. Reducing stress, number one, for both you, the owner, and the rabbit. Getting that thorough clinical history. Try not to sort of skirt around that and get down to the real facts about this animal, because that will be a massive investment for the future and reduce time in future consultations. Looking at the animal from a distance, hopefully you're really keyed up on that, because you know, looking at those gait pictures, it's really important to be assessing that gait, looking at the respiratory rate and pattern, and being key whether this is normal or not. And owners often miss these rabbits with osteoarthritis, so do start looking at the gait in the consult. Doing a thorough clinical exam, and please look in the mouth and ears of every rabbit that comes in, and also then communicating the findings and the significance of those to your client. So, just a little plea at the end, look in every rabbit's ears, look in every rabbit's mouth, check for the facial symmetry, look at the gait. You will be picking up things that you perhaps haven't seen before from that. So, I have had a couple of questions that have come in. So, I just wanted to go through these a little bit more. We were talking earlier about the ear-based swellings, and this is something I think that people are seeing a lot of, and just been asked about the significance of these and what to do if you find them, because I think you will, when you start feeling rabbits' ears, and particularly lop-eared rabbits, you will start finding these cases. We see a lot at the vet school. I don't think we've really got time to talk about this, and perhaps this will be covered in another webinar, but if you do find a swelling there, and you know, obviously these can or may not be painful. I always look down the ear to assess whether there's any inflammation or discharge. And if we do have any obvious discharge, I would take samples from both ears, good and bad, for cytology. So literally just get a little cotton bud, gently roll it around the ear, roll that onto a slide, and then we're staining that up to have a look and see what's going on, because rabbit wax is quite pale, and so normal wax production can be confused with pus. So we want to be looking at cytology to see, do we have inflammatory cells? Do we have any obvious infection going on? Are there perhaps yeasts? Is there a real overgrowth of bacteria, staphs and streps perhaps, rather than just a few scant clumps that you'd see in a normal healthy ear? And the more you do of these, the more you'll know what's normal and what isn't. But I guess this is a little bit subjective, but it's giving us an idea of what's going on in that ear. Also then discussing with the owner next steps and whether we can afford or we have the option for CT imaging, which really is the mainstay to look at middle ear disease, which obviously if we've got a swelling, we probably can't see down to the eardrum. We don't know what's going on further on within the middle ear as well. Treatment of these again, you know, it's a whole big subject, but I don't think we can leave these. If you do, they will continue to build up. They will be painful. They are a welfare issue. The mainstay for us really is trying to remove that material, and there are different options for doing that. The most obvious being a general anaesthetic and gentle flushing and physical removal via endoscopic viewing. But there have also been surgical techniques described as well. So do cytology in these cases. Do have to start looking at that. We can do culture as well if we feel that there's infection present, and we're finding, unfortunately, quite a few of these are multi-resistant infections, so that's perhaps key as well. I did also have another quick question. We showed a few slides looking at anemia in pet rabbits, and I do feel it sometimes it's difficult, and it is quite a subjective thing to know whether that rabbit is truly anemic. But if we've got a suspicion that these mucous membranes are pale, then do offer owners, follow up with full blood work, or at the very least, perhaps a PCV and total solids and blood smear. I think that really is important. We're seeing a lot of older rabbits with chronic anemia associated with chronic disease, and perhaps weight loss, body condition loss as well. And obviously renal disease perhaps is there, in the foremost of our thoughts, perhaps as a potential cause. But certainly chronic infections also can lead to chronic anemia cases in rabbits. So if there's a suspicion, do try and persuade owner to follow this up, because we do get some fairly profoundly anemic rabbits coming into us that have not been picked up by owners. And perhaps there's just a general history of lethargy and perhaps some weight loss as well. In rabbits, be aware that the distinction that we make in dogs and cats of regenerative versus non-regenerative is less clear cut, and we perhaps can't categorize our anemias in that way. And what's perhaps more appropriate is categorizing them with perhaps the disease process that's occurring. So chronic anemia of chronic disease is a really common thing, but obviously anemia associated with a significant blood loss or lack of red blood cell production for other reasons is also possible. So I hope that has been an interesting and enlightening talk for you, and I hope it's made you or helped you think about how you manage your rabbit cases and given you a few ideas and pointers as to things that you might be able to implement just to make that whole process run more smoothly and be more efficient for both you, but also a better experience for your clients and perhaps a more thorough experience for your pet rabbits. So thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Emma for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.